Welcome to the Scrum.org Community Podcast, a podcast from the home of Scrum. In this podcast, we feature professional Scrum trainers and other Scrum practitioners sharing their stories and experiences to help learn from the experience of others. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hello and welcome to the Scrum.org Community Podcast. I'm your host, Dave West, CEO here at Scrum.org. That was a bit hard to say on a Monday morning. In today's podcast, I'm really excited because many of you know I'm a bit of a product nerd, and I'm actually on with two PSTs that are more product nerdy and certainly smarter about product than me. So it's I always get so much out of these talks. Today, we're talking to Chris Lucassen and Robin Sherman about their new book. I actually was fortunate enough to write the foreword, so I got a sneak preview of the book. The new book's called Practical Product Management for Product Owners. Welcome to the podcast, Robin and Chris.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, Dave.
It's great to have you here.
You know, we always get very nerdy on the whole product topic. So before we jump into that, and I'm dying to do it. Before we jump into that, tell our listeners a little bit of where, who you are and where you're talking to us from. Maybe start with you, Robin.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Great to be here. My name is Robin Schuurman. I live in the Netherlands. I live quite in the center of the Netherlands, between Utrecht and Den Bosch, in a very small town. I think I've been a PST for around 6 years now, mostly focused on product management. So teaching other people about product management, growing this profession is kind of what I do.
It's great. Yeah. So I think maybe almost seven, actually, because I can remember when you joined the community and I remember spending many hours talking about product, which was really exciting. Thanks and welcome to the podcast. Yeah, great talks. And Chris.
Yeah, so Chris Lucassen, I don't think I've been called a nerd that often in a very long time. I do have a background in software engineering, so I think the label stuck. But I very quickly learned that engineers had very little to tell in our organization. I don't know, that's not what it's supposed to be, but that's what life was like. And I tried to figure out, so why are we building this stuff and why is it important? And that's my segue into product management. I became a PST slightly later than Robin. Robin was already a PST, I think, when I joined. And I came from a product management background, and I was fortunate to come across this strange concept that was called Scrum that seemed to make everybody happy. And as I was working with it, it became my favorite tool. So that made me move me into product.
Yeah, and it's great to have you both here in our community. There's this smaller but thriving group of PSTs that talk about product all the time and are very passionate about that, which is great. All right, so let's jump into the content. A new book on product management. Now, Chris, you wrote a book called Product Samurai, which is got such a cool title, and I wish I'd thought of it. Robin, you wrote also a brilliantly titled book about product managers and mastering the art of no, basically talking about stakeholder management. Both great books and with awesome titles. But why do we need another book on agile product management and product ownership? And let's start there with Chris. Tell me, why do we need another book, Chris?
Well, first of all, I think you made an interesting remark with the titles. Like, often we focus on creating products, creating content, and we forget about the marketing and the channel and the way we sell it or connect it to customer problems. And for example, Robin's book on saying no, it's the key problem that many of our product owners run into. So it makes totally sense to not only come up with a way to do that, but also to find a way to tell the public about your product to stand out. And building on that, like another book, I don't think that there were many books that were specifically targeting product owners on how to become more effective in their role and their accountabilities and how to find their way in large organizations or organizations that already had a product and already had an established way of building products and behaving. And it's sort of not exactly Scrum by the book. And these people go to our PSP01 training and they become super enthusiastic about doing Scrum and oh, it's awesome. And I'm going to create a greenfield scenario. And they come back to their companies and they're super disappointed. And we felt that they need a little bit more guidance on what effective behavior is for product owners to apply as different set of tools in a different context. Basically, it's about practical product management for product owners. So
it's the title says it all, right? Robin, what's your take on it?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Most importantly, from my perspective, is what I see a lot of product owners do in practice is really focus on getting those basics in place first, right? Because for a lot of companies, Scrum is quite new in a sense. For us, we've been doing all kinds of fun stuff with Scrum for somewhere between 5 to 25 years, depending who you ask in the community. So for us, it's kind of normal. But for a lot of people in practice, doing Scrum isn't that normal. So we typically start by teaching them what is product ownership in the context of Scrum, right? So that's where you start with a PSP01 course. What is product ownership with Scrum? However, at some point in time, you want to outgrow the focus on Scrum, especially as a product owner. As Scrum is still important. It's a framework that will help you to build good products. But it's kind of the basics. Having a good retrospective or a daily, that's not the main concern for a product owner. You want to build an awesome product. And in order to do so, you need to outgrow Scrum, I would say, and focus much more on good product management practices. And that's why we wrote the book, to help you kind of take the step from being a PO in a Scrum team to becoming this more agile product manager.
And it's interesting that the stances kind of glue everything together. They're the, I think you call them the red thread, or they kind of bring everything together. And stances is an interesting way of approaching the skills, because it talks about, okay, in this situation, you arrive at the problem in this way, or the situation in this way, and you apply these skills in that context. Can, you know, maybe Chris, if you could talk a little bit about the stances for our listeners.
Yeah, I'm not sure to whom I should attribute the quote, but there's a quote that says, all models are wrong, some are useful. and I absolutely love that quote. So bear in mind that the stances are just a model. It's just a way for us to describe typical behavior of successful product owners, or not so successful product owners. And it was like a metaphor that we used to connect the different subjects to. And me as a martial artist, stances are, of course, very important, because a wrong stance makes you quickly unbalanced, and then basically you lose. And the same is true for golf, which is Robin's poison. Apparently, stances are important there as well.
Poison?
I don't know. I throw people, not balls. But so the concept of stances was super, super important for us to have this kind of metaphor to connect the subjects to. And we actually did a bit of research on this, and we looked at typical behavior of more effective product owners and less effective product owners. And they said, well, this person feels like they feel like a clerk. They're just running around taking orders. That's probably not how Scrum intended this role to be. And then we ran into some other product owners. They're like real true visionaries and rallying people behind them and giving these great storytelling, doing great presentations on what they want to achieve, showing people the future, building an alliance. I said, yeah, a little bit more of that, that would be useful. And so that's sort of the structure that we used. But maybe Robin, you can build on that, because you created all the beautiful little icons for the stances,
which are just the visuals, right? But I think you pretty much described it very well. Maybe important to mention is that when talking about these stances, it's a temporary behavior or collection of behaviors, mindset, and an attitude. Much like a temporary stance in martial arts or golf or something else, it's something you do for a while. And we'll probably go into some more detail about these stances. Chris mentioned a couple, like the visionary or the customer representative. These are just temporary things that you do. So one of the key points why we started calling these stances is because you want to stimulate that given a certain situation, someone will step into a certain stance, which you believe will resolve that situation most effectively, most quickly, most efficiently, whatever it is you're trying to achieve. So there are some situations where you may need to step more into your visionary stance. So you start communicating your vision, telling the stories like Chris just shared. But at another point in time, in another situation, it may be required of you to step more into the shoes of being the customer representative and actually focusing everyone around you, maybe the stakeholders, on what is the customer problem that we want to solve? Who is our customer in the first place? What are they looking for? What are their needs and problems to solve? But this may not be something that you do all the time. And in the book, we also write some misunderstood stances, like the story writer, for example, which is a product owner who spends most of their time in Jira or Azure DevOps or Confluence or whatever tool you use, basically writing down all the user stories with acceptance criteria and details and all that kind of stuff. But that's not really the point of being a product owner, right? Writing down all those details. And of course, the book describes in more detail what it is that these stances actually are. So we want to move you away from these misunderstood stances like a story writer and actually move you into preferred stances like that visionary.
I found them really useful. Because sometimes just being reminded of them helps you sort of step away from, I don't want to say the detail or the chaos that is product ownership. I myself do a little bit of it, sometimes very badly, sometimes occasionally by accident very well. But it's good to step back. I particularly like this. Okay, I need to be the visionary here. I need to communicate to our community or my team what the story is. How do I jump into that? And the book I found really provides you with some excellent like little tips for how to do that and skills for doing that, which sort of brings me to the next thing. So you talk a lot about in the book about the skills, you know, the storytelling is a great skill, right? You talk a lot about what are that minimum set of skills that you think a product owner really needs? Or certainly, where should they start? They've been to the PSPO class, they're starting this journey. We hope they've been, obviously. They're starting this journey. Talk me a little bit about the skills that you think are super important for a product owner.
Yeah, but I mean, there's many, right? So besides the stuff that we wrote down in the book, there's some competency or skill models that both Chris and I have created in the past, sometimes ranging up to, depending on the type of product owner and context that you're in, 36 different skills potentially. So there's a lot that could be relevant. It depends really on your context, right? Are you a more technical kind of product owner, or are you a more marketing kind of product owner, or more business savvy kind of product owner? So there's a lot that kind of influences all this stuff. Just to name an example, if you're a more technical product owner in a really big company and you own some kind of a technical component product, for example, pricing may not be very relevant to your context. Yeah. However, if you're a business or marketing kind of product owner and you want to put your product in the market successfully, it is super important that you actually understand pricing. And so there's a bit of context related to the actual skills that you need as well. But in general, we also focus the name on the book, Practical Product Management, really on teaching those kinds of skills that you tend to need in all those different product owner jobs. And that's why we tied them to the 6 preferred stances. And basically what I would recommend to people is just read the introduction chapter of the book, figure out which kind of misunderstood stances am I displaying most often, which kind of preferred stances should I be growing into more, and then just go into that stance and explore a couple of the skills that we mentioned there. That would probably be the best starting point.
Yeah,
that, because there's a lot of skills to learn.
And there are, and they're very contextual. And that's always been the biggest challenge that we have at Scrum.org in terms of teaching. Because as you well know, when you walk into a product owner class, or virtually or physically, the particularly a public class, they very varied who's going to be in that class. Some of them could be more like project managers, dare I say that. Some people will be more like business analysts, which definitely have that writing story problem. And some of them are more like the, you know, ISV, independent software vendor type, real product type people that come from a product management, product marketing background. So it's so hard. And so I think that the guidance about, hey, start with looking at the stances and the anti-stances, as it were, look at that and then move into that is so crucial. Chris, anything to add?
Yeah, so the advantage of Robin answering the question is that I have time to think. So I'm never sure if it's a skill or a trait, but like the one thing that you, if there's one thing you should have is like empathy or pure passion for the problem that you're solving for the customer. So you have to be madly in love with the work that you're doing because it's a crazy job. It takes you all over the place. It takes you through all the different stances. The amount of problems that you'll run into is usually quite a lot and quite difficult and complex, and it changes all the time. And your anchor in that time, for me at least, it's the passion for what am I trying to do here? Who am I trying to help? What is my mission here? And as you go through that, and I think that was an excellent suggestion for Robin, just start at some point, do one thing, don't start doing six stances and then seven different practices, because that's 42 different combinations. You lose yourself in that. But try to figure out what your true passion is here and figure out which one of the stances or practices helps you best, and then get better in that one. And also, because it's such an incredibly complex profession, you don't need to do everything. Sometimes learning about the stances can also teach you saying, well, actually, I'm not very good with customers. Then find somebody in your team that is skilled in doing customer interviews and finding that feedback about what really the issue is. So find people that augment your weaknesses. I was talking to a head of products just before this meeting, and he's very much into the financial part. And that's a skill we don't see everywhere, but he's weaker in the engineering part. So my advice would be find somebody that you trust in your team, in your inner circle, that helps you create that product and build that relationship. So make sure your team has that expertise. And it's also the other way around. If you're a great engineer and if you're a great engineer and you happen to become a product owner, then find somebody, and you don't like finance, then find somebody that finds finance important and has a passion about finance. Because if you don't know how much a sprint costs, or what a product costs, or what a return on investment is, or what the impact is on the liquidity or on the risk, then somebody in your team should know that.
So I'm so glad you didn't stay an engineer, Chris, because you said something that is right at the start of your answer. You said something that just hit me really hard. Product ownership isn't easy. The reality is, though, if you care, and as I do deeply about the outcomes that we're trying to achieve, in the case of Scrum.org, it's helping people and teams solve complex problems, giving them just some tips to the art of the possible, you know, managing this complexity that the world is, and giving them hope when sometimes it is hopeless. If you care about that passion, then everything else is just, I mean, details, pain, etc. And then, yeah, I think that's so I'm glad you didn't stay an engineer for that one thing that really resonated with me. I'll be honest. It was really good. Thank you for that. Okay, so didn't mean to get all deep there for a second, but that is the power of this book, actually, and the power of the stances and the power of the practical stuff It sort of serves many levels. It sort of is protective, it's inspiring, it's informative, and it helps you get stuff done. I think it's a really good book on product ownership and agile product management, which leads into the last section. And I know our time, we try to keep it short. I'd love your take on this. So originally, product ownership was called agile product management in the original document that Ken wrote 27 years ago, 28 years ago. And then over time, it changed to product ownership to emphasize the importance of control, because teams were being moved from left to right, all over the place. This agile product manager was really just managing, wasn't actually directing. And so it became product ownership. And, you know, over the last probably 10 years, we've seen the influx of design thinking, experimentation, hypothesis-driven development, the work of Lean UX, the work of that kind of those ideas, value streams, outcome-centric EBM, et cetera. I'd love your just, and this is a huge question, and I appreciate you're not going to have time to answer it properly, but I'd love your take a little bit about the future and talk at me little thing. You know, got this, you know, great book, sets out some foundations, some really good stuff. Where is product ownership and agile product management going? And how are things going to change?
Maybe before actually going into that question, Dave, it's kind of interesting what you just mentioned, right? That when the first Scrum Guide was published, Ken actually spoke about agile product manager instead of, yep, or product manager instead of product owner, which is a super interesting topic in itself, right? You can have a debate of like an hour on, is it product owner? Is it product manager? Is there two different roles or positions even, or jobs, whatever you want to call it. But I think it's kind of interesting to putting these names into perspective. Like you said, it was product manager. It's moved into product owner. For me as a Dutchman, it also makes a lot of sense. When I hear about someone being a business manager or a business owner or a company manager or a company owner, that sets the tone, right? The owner, there's nothing higher in hierarchies or mandates than the owner of the company typically. So it's always so interesting that a lot of organizations and other frameworks besides Scrum kind of flip those around, where the product owner sits in a team and the product manager is doing more the strategy stuff. So I'm actually hoping, and kind of going to your question, what is the future going to hold? I'm actually hoping that in the industry, we start considering it more that maybe the product owner is the actual owner of the product. Maybe not like by law or financially getting all those benefits, but really acting like that owner of that product. So there's nothing to beat, much like the Scrum Guide says as well, nobody can overrule the product owner, right? Sounds good in theory. But what if you tie it to practice? Nobody can overrule the company owner, and then we can all understand it, makes sense. So hopefully we can move more into that direction. That would be one thing that I would hope for the future, at least.
What about you, Chris? Where do you think this evolution is taking us?
Well, I'm still a little bit an engineer, so I can. No, but I think it's really interesting what Robin says, and I always attribute it to Ken, but I'm not really sure if he actually made it the analogy. But he compared it to a restaurant. Like, if you're a manager of a restaurant, you sort of leave at 10 o'clock when the restaurant closes. But if you're the owner, you'll sweep the floor, because you own the place and you want it to be pretty and tidy and as you intended it to be. And I think that's the point that Robin made very powerful. I think when you look at it from an engineering perspective, some amazing things are happening these days. And what I hope that will happen is that it will, I was about to say reduce the workforce, but I realized that has a negative connotation to it. But it will reduce the amount of people that you need to solve a complex problem. And what we see now is that there's still a bit of this old mindset in that if you throw enough people at a problem, there's going to be more value. And you still see this mindset in a lot of companies, like, oh, we need more teams, we need more engineers. And we're on the threshold of really delegating all the stupid work, like the simple work, to AI and other technologies, and really focus on the brain power of people that you have in there. And that opens up the opportunity to do maybe with 20 people what you can do with 200 people. And that will drive us towards smaller organization creating equally valuable or even more valuable products. And that is an excellent place for Scrum to thrive, and for product ownership to be real product ownership, where we take all the boring work away from us. And that happens on an engineering level, but it also happens at a product level. Like, lots of the analytics and the analysis that we do is nitty-gritty work. And there's every day, and literally every day, there are more powerful tools coming around that simplify the work that used to take me a very long time to figure out. So I think the future will move towards smaller organizations, smaller teams, and basically smaller companies with a small company owner. And yeah, that's sort of the best place for practical product owners to be.
I think the idea that complicated and simple work will be replaced with this technology for knowledge workers, and ultimately that will free up so many millions of people to do creative work, which means, you know, obviously we use containers called products for the customer value boundary, but this will have a lot more opportunity for product owners, and the giving them the skills to actually thrive in this world is the reason why I am a product owner at scrum.org. So thanks for that, Chris. I completely agree. Well, gentlemen, we've come to the end of our time. Oh, but before we do, Robin, I think you've got something to add here.
Yeah, so I really like the vision that Chris just pitched with companies or product groups becoming smaller. There's, of course, also a lot of enterprise organizations, and I'm assuming there's also a lot of listeners who are in one of those enterprise organizations who may kind of feel like, oh, yeah, what's going to happen with with my company then? So I also think the other trend could be applicable, right? Instead of companies becoming more like mini companies, bigger organizations and product owners in bigger organizations could also increase their ownership and their scope. Where currently you may be owning some kind of a technical product, which is part of a bigger product, which is part of a bigger product, and which is part of some kind of a suite. Maybe you end up being a product owner of a bigger product at some point in time. And this is probably not going to happen tomorrow, but hopefully in a couple of years, we can actually start increasing our ownership as product owners, where you can own a bigger end-to-end problem to solve, or market problem to solve, or customer problem to solve, or even a technology problem to solve. But it's going to be a bigger one than just manage this set of APIs. And that's where I do see product management going in the future. And like you said, Dave, with technical technology kind of stuff supporting us, I also think like stuff like generative AI, for example, is going to support us there. I mean, there's a lot of product managers, product owners who spend quite a bit of time writing user stories. Well, in a couple of years, maybe Gen AI can actually generate the user stories for you if you really clearly point out what is the problem to solve. So technology is going to help there. Think of stuff like product analytics, being able to actually track and measure how your product is performing, to see people behaving in your product, especially if it's a digital one. That's going to massively change product management, right? But there's a lot of companies who aren't really able to steer on product analytics data. There's a lot of talks about value, but who is actually able to qualify and quantify what kind of value is being delivered every single sprint? There's not a lot of teams who are there already. So there's a lot of stuff in those areas that can still be done, I think. And we should be doing that in the future.
And I think, I'm hoping we will. I think the next big stage, I think both of you talked a little about this, but we have to start thinking more effectively about how we productize our organizations, call it product model, call it whatever, alignment, call it I think that is going to it's going to basically uncork the opportunity that both of you are talking about. Yeah, it's super interesting. I could talk all day to you two. I mean, you know that it's not, this isn't the first time. So, and I know that our listeners have other things to do. Maybe they themselves are going to go back to writing user stories or something. Remember, ChatGPT can almost do it now. So, thank you for your time today. I really, really, really do appreciate it, and taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk about your new book, Practical Product Management for Product Owners, which is available in on Amazon.com or wherever you get your books. So thank you, Chris, Robin, for taking the time today.
Thank you, Dave.
So everybody, that was today's podcast. We're very fortunate to have Chris Lucassen and Robin Sherman talking about their new book, Practical Product Management for Product Owners. This was a great talk. I actually have got a list of things I want to talk about next, so maybe there'll be follow-on conversations. But this was just one podcast. There's a series of podcasts. If your first podcast, feel free to listen to others, and there'll be more coming. Thank you for taking the time to listen today to the Scrum.org Community Podcast. I'm your host, Dave West, saying goodbye and Scrum on.